My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. I picked this one. Love you too, Thomas. We are not a glum lot. Even though Polly Pistol had a whole bunch of us with tissues, we are not a glum lot. I get to bring it home. I usually like it. Polly does 12 a lot of times with these deals. I kind of get used to Polly taking us home, too. Wish I had been here for Thursday night. I'm going to do like Polly did, too. I'm not a guy that comes in and you invite me in and I just kind of come in, do my deal and get out of here. You know, I love the whole deal. I love listening to speakers. I try not to miss anybody when I get an opportunity to go somewhere. I try to make it the whole time. Leslie knows, and Leslie's a diva, and she has to get ready and the rest. I'm like, I'll see you in the meeting, you know, because I still am amazed at the fellowship that has allowed me and has tolerated me and has grown me up for these past 33 years. I still get jazzed at it. So I hated missing Lily, but I had an opportunity to interact with her and she's a piece of work. Lily reminds me what it is that I like so much in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, especially when you come to a weekend like this. You know, and for people to come to these kind of weekends, see, this kind of deal, I play baseball. And I used to wonder as a kid, why was it that major leaguers love hitting fastballs? Because I want you to lob it into me. I didn't understand why they liked fast, and they would be fooled by curveball off speed. I didn't understand that, you know. And it's kind of like the same thing when you go to meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you go to these speaker meetings, you know. And you think that the only person that's delivering is the person that's standing up here, you know. But there's an energy, you know. So when a fastball comes in, if you connect with it, you know, it goes a lot further. And that's the same kind of dynamic that goes on with speaker meetings, you know, because it's not a one-way street. It's a dynamic that's going on. There are pitchers and there are catchers. You know, there are senders and there are receivers. And when you get a group like this that comes to these Woodstocks, you know, it's fertile ground. You know, so it's easy for a person to come up here and to share their stories, because these are the, in Alcoholics Anonymous, even inside Alcoholics Anonymous, these are the people that are hungry. These are the people that I like to say are in the game. You know, everybody's on the team, but everybody ain't in the game. And the people that come to these kind of deals are in the game, generally speaking. And so it makes it easy, and I like coming to these deals. But the thing about it is, you might think that these deals are really full of information. And I'm going to go out here this weekend, and I'm going to gather a lot of information about the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's cool, because there is a lot of information disseminated, and there is a lot of information that's transmitted, and there are some of the prime communicators in Alcoholics Anonymous that comes to these deals, save this guy up here, you know. But other than that, you get some prime communicators. But that's not the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not the real deal. It's a lot of information to share. And I'm an information guy. I'm an information junkie. Don't get me wrong. But that's not the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I was sitting listening to Lily, and when I look at Polly, you know, the real power of Alcoholics Anonymous, don't look for the information. Look for the transformation. The transformation. That's what really takes place in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when I was sitting with Lily, looking, I'm like, this looks like just a grandmotherly, matronly lady sitting up here. And then she starts talking. I'm like, oh, my God. You know, baby, please don't you leave us. That's the same thing with Polly. Polly's up here. And Polly is what she looks like, but Polly is more than what she looks like, too. You know, we were at a conference one time, because don't get fooled. Don't get fooled. Dave will tell you, don't get fooled. Now, Polly is full of love and light, But Polly's got a lot of steel in her, too. You know, we were at one of these conferences, and Polly was with a bunch of her girls, and one of the girls, they wanted to have T-shirts made saying, "I've been pistol whooped." You know? Because Polly is a no-nonsense sponsor. With a big, but Polly is, her idea of sponsorship is the same as mine. You have some of these sponsors, and I listen to people, and they be like, I've heard people say, if you like your sponsor, you need to get another one. If you love your sponsor, I don't come from that school. I love my sponsor. Every time I leave my sponsor, don't know, he kisses me on the cheek. And my sponsor's, you know, exterior, he's not that guy. Big guy, gruff guy. My sponsor is Bob Zanz out of St. Paul, Minnesota. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I love my sponsor. Joe is one of my brothers. So I wasn't here for the family group, but I know the family. That's the other deal. Polly didn't tell you when she was up here. She's married to my brother. She mentioned my other brother, but she's married to my brother Dave, and he's the handsome one in the family. So I know this family. So I wish I had been here to get the family group. But I've heard each one of them individually, and you've seen Jane, and you talk about a ball of fire. You know, I know Jane's family. You know what? I think I talked the other night about heart speakers and head speakers, and I don't have anything prepared for this 12 step because I really don't need to have anything prepared for this 12 step. But I'm interested to see what we're going to hear this morning, too. I'm interested to see what we're going to hear, because Polly has inspired me. And looking out here at the group, I can't believe the journey I've had the opportunity to take in Alcoholics Anonymous. So who did I hear first? Oh, I heard me first. He doesn't count. So then James did 1, 2, and 3. And I've known James before I met James, because I'm known as Mom. And she's talked about her boys. And I got a soft spot for moms talking about their boys, because I got a mom that talks about her boys. And James is a remarkable example to Alcoholics Anonymous. So when he took us through 1, 2, and 3 and started this party, and then he handed it off to Lily, 4 and 5. I'm just starting, Charlie. Damn, he's already shutting me down. You know, when the dogs start barking, it's like, ooh, okay. I'm going to get into it, Charlie. I promise. Joseph, one of my favorite communicators in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if these, you know, I have to give a shout out. Dick started this deal. This is number 11. Doesn't seem like it. And it follows a format that came out of Nevada, State Line Retreat, in the second weekend in December. And so that retreat spawned a few others. You know, there was one in Orlando. Polly talked about it. And Polly got the news about her sponsor dying at that one. But she came to her sponsor's funeral at another Woodstock that was spawned from that, that followed this one, too. And I do a Woodstock in Los Angeles called Woodstock West. And it's in May of every year. And if you didn't get enough of Joe doing 6 and 7 here, come see him in Los Angeles in May. This dude right here, remarkable story. Took us through 6, 7, 8, and 9. Polly cried our eyes out this morning in 10 and 11. So after we've taken a journey through all those, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of those steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. At 12th step. Promise this offer to all of us. What do I get if I come in here and sign up with this group? What do I get if I come in here and bring my broken down life to you guys and lay it on the table? What do I get when I come to you at 33 years old, hadn't looked at a mirror full face in about the last couple of years, had lost everything of value to me, everything materially, and I lost a couple of other things that October in 1986. I had lost the power of choice over whether or not I'd started up again that morning. And I lost the will to care. And the second part scared me more than the first part, when I stopped caring about what had happened to me, because I didn't grow up like that. Gave you a brief preview of the guy I was when I was coming up as a kid, and I had dreams, goals, ambitions, and hopes. I was a high achiever, and I was a do-it guy. I was a make-things-happen kind of guy. I went off to school, the first kid off my block, and I went off to school with still dreams, goals, hopes, and ambitions, and I went crazy when I went to school. And I got that thing, and nobody could tell me I had that thing. Even though I said I didn't want to be like my old man, my daddy was an alcoholic, and my first vow of him was I don't want to be like him. He wasn't abusive, and he wasn't violent. He was an absentee drunk, and he was not a dad you were proud of. He was not a Cosby dad. He was not a Beaver Cleaver dad. He was one of those drunks. He was one of those ripple drinkers. He was one of those brown bag drinking kind of guys. And he was not the guy that I wanted to come to Father Son night, you know, or the ones that I wanted to come to the banquet, you know, when we had the end of a season. He wasn't the guy that I wanted to show up at school when I was getting most outstanding graduate, and he wasn't the guy that did show up. So I was ashamed and I was embarrassed about that guy, and my earliest vow was I'm not going to be like him. So I was determined not to. But when I was 16 years old, I had already outstripped and achieved him. Ominous warning that I failed to heed that the book talks about. And so I never even thought about it when I first got introduced to drinking. I'm not going to be my old man. I'm already well past the way that he was. Plus the fact, you know, who thinks about when you make a vow is kind of like, okay, it's something that's inside you, but to do the things to carry that vow out, I ain't thinking about that. Everybody, I didn't drink like a lot of people did to escape. I didn't drink to become somebody else. I drank because when you turn 16 and you growing up and you a square guy and you want to be cool, it's what you do. It's fun and games. I didn't have a lot of thought to it. I didn't have a lot of premeditation to it. I just started drinking. And I was drinking with no consequences. I graduated from high school and I went off to college, and it was the 60s. It was the early 70s, and it was fun and games. And it was party time. And it was no consequences and no thought to it whatsoever. By the mid-80s, I had burned my life to the ground. I was working in management in a major utility company in their law department, and I had about 1985, and I had risen in the workforce. Cold thing about me, a guy like me, the book describes me as the real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So although I was achieving in the workplace and I was growing in the workplace, side by side with my achievements in the workplace, my alcoholism was growing. You know, and so what ends up happening is I'm a business guy by day, but I'm a vampire by night. And the vampire always outgrows the businessman. The vampire always outgrows the housewife. The vampire always outgrows the BTA president. And the vampire started showing up at work. And the vampire don't work at work. And they don't pay the vampire to come to work. And so one day they called the vampire in and said, dude, you got to go and take dude with you. Lost my dream job. 1985. And from 85 to 86, I did the aimless walk. I got put out of my house in 1985. I had gotten married in 1980, had a little girl in 1983. And I got put out when I was in 1985. And I went to stay at my mom's house with my five brothers. And we damn near killed my mom. She had a nervous breakdown in 85. And in October of 86, I crashed and burned. And I landed on your doorstep. And I went to the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles in October of 1986. And I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And after I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned some things. I learned some things about me, and I didn't know them about me. You know, after I had been sober about a year going to meetings, I'm the kind of guy that I'm an all-in guy. When I'm in, I'm in. You know, I collected baseball cards because, you know, I'm that kind of guy. You know, I collected football cards, baseball cards. I subscribe to High Times. You know, whatever I get involved in, I get all the way involved in it. And it dawned on me, why be in a 12-step program and not know anything about the 12 steps? So I started going to meetings, and I started going to meetings, and I started going to meetings. And I'm glad I was part of a home group that's a three legacy group, you know, unity, recovery, and service. And the first thing I started doing, I fell in love with the fellowship before I fell in love with the program. Didn't know anything about the program recovery, but I was in love with the fellowship. It's never been hard for me to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Me and Leslie share about that all the time. It's one of my blind spots in sponsorship. It's hard for me to really wrap my head around why it's hard for a guy to go to meetings. But it is hard for some people to go to me. I recognize that. It's one of the things I know about myself, you know, that it's hard for me because I love going to meetings. I'm an avid reader. As a kid, I love reading. Where do you find better stories than the stories that you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous? I have, especially if you go to my home group or the groups that I go to. I don't go to the milk and tea kind of, no, you know, I go to the ones, you know, and I wanted a penitentiary story, but I didn't want to go to the pen to get one. You know, so my story is my story. So I live vicariously through you guys. And that's another one of the transformational things. The first time I heard Jane sharing, and Jane was just sharing her story, and she's this, you know, she's this cute girl, and she's up here, and she's really vivacious and over the top, and Jane is super enthusiastic, almost like a cheerleader at the podium, and Jane is smiling and grinning, and then she shares her story, and then she says, and I ended up in the penitentiary. I said, wait, stop. You can't just slide that out here. I went to the penitentiary. You went to the pen? You know, here I am, hard guy, South Central. I'm scared of jail. I ain't never done more than, no. You know, and Miss Suburban went to the pen. You know, that's why I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't put us in a category. You know, you can't. And so she was sharing, and I'm like, oh my God. But I like those stories. You know, I like them. So I started going to meetings and going to meetings and going. And why be in a 12-step program and not be a part of the 12 steps? So the first thing I did, the unity, going to meetings. That's the first part of the triangle. And then my brother and I were at a marathon meeting, and we heard some people share about the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous in a way I had never heard before. And it intrigued me and it interested me. And we asked a couple of people from that group, would you do that for us? And we asked my mom. Me and my brother were staying at my mom's house. We were both a year sober, you know, and I had another brother, Reggie, that had just recently gone into recovery. And we asked my mom, could we open the doors and ask some people to come through her house and take us through the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And in November of 1987, about 12 people sat around my mother's dining room table, and we cracked those blue books open. And we had our very first meeting in the Never Too Early Big Book. Now, we didn't know we would be the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop. I kind of liken it to when Bill and Bob sat down and they started going to meetings and they started going over to T. Henry and Clarissa. You know, they didn't. When you're in the middle of something, you don't know you're in the middle of something. You're just desperate trying to do better. You know what I'm saying? And we started doing that, and we went through the Big Book page by page, line by line, and we've been doing that, and some people heard about it after we went through, and they said, we'd like to do that, and so we invited them over, and they went through, and we're not a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're some people who go through the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous as a group. We have Al-Anons, we have members of CA, and we just are members who go through the book. And some people heard about it, and they said, we want to do it. And then we did what we do. When we liked something, we did it again, and we kept doing it. And this morning, about 250 members of the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop will get on their knees today and do the third step prayer. This is our third step prayer day. Who would have thought it? And in going through that Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned some things about me. I learned that the reason that I kept getting loaded in spite of the fact that I said I wouldn't was because I was not in control of that. When I take something in me, it sets off a bodily reaction. The doctor, in the doctor's opinion, called this the phenomena of craving. And he called it a phenomena because we can't see it, we can't touch it, we can't feel it, but we know that it happens. How we know it happens? Because it happens to us. And it only happens to us. I'm not one of the people that says it's in the book, so it's true. My mama reads the Big Book. If my mom reads the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, the phenomena of craving does not happen for her. it happens for me because I'm an alcoholic. And it explained things that had been unexplainable to me. I didn't know why I couldn't come home with a whole paycheck. I used to wonder, how come you can't come home? My wife would say, how come you can't bring a dime home out your paycheck? And I'd raise up and be pissed off. And I'd be thinking, how come I can't bring a dime home out my paycheck? And I didn't know it was because when I take the first one, it sets off something in me that only takes place in a guy like me. Only takes place in people like us. It separates us and distinguishes us as a distinct entity, the doctor calls it, this phenomena of craving. And it happens after I take the first one. Okay, if it's only after I take the first one, later on the Bill talks about this would be academic and pointless. Why do I take the first one? Because I'm the kind of guy that when I ain't got one up in me, doctor calls it restless, irritable, discontent. I call it, I'm bored. I need something to happen. I got to go to the car, unroll, roll, do something. You know, I'm drinking. Something has got to happen to me. I call it, what about Wednesday? You know, I can go Monday. I can go Tuesday. I'm cool. I'm good. But about when I get restless. Something's got to happen. I can't just sit up here in the house like this, you know. And so this idea of you know, when I'm not drinking, you know, I can't help. All I'm thinking about is drinking. You know, there's something physically different about me that when I take one, I can't stop, you know. But then there's the mental part of me that don't accept the fact that it's something physically different about me, and I gotta have another one anyway. You know, this physical and this mental component. So it's something physically different about me and mentally different. And so then I'm like, okay, all right. I kind of grudgingly look at the fact that it's something different about me. I knew it was something physically different about me, but I had it confused. I thought that it was, that I had high capacity. No, you know, you can't stop when you start because you don't have no off switch. You don't have no regulator. You either don't have a regulator or it's a broke regulator. It's like, at any rate, you don't have one. You know, so then I'm like, okay. So then I was like, but I'm also like Polly. I'm this guy that comes in with this deeply religious background, at least that I was exposed to. I never bought it. I'm the guy, this time of the year, you're going to bring the white boys up, me and my brothers, at church, at Sunday school. We're going to recite the Christmas story. We're going to tell you about the three wise men. We're going to tell you all that because we smart guys and we remember stuff and we like adulation and attention. So we like to spit stuff back out. But for me, it all felt like myths and stories to me. And I said, the minute I turn 16 years old, you won't have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of nobody else's church. Said it did admit it. You know, religion's opiate of the people, rather smoke mine. Thank you very much. You know, and that's saying cute little things like that. I'm out. I'm gone. You know, so I come in here and I hit that, chapter, we agnostics, you know, and I'm taking liberties. I know it, you know, but when I do at a Woodstock, you can go back over some steps. Just don't go ahead. So since I got 12, I get to go back over a few of the steps, right? That's just the way I do it there. So I get to go back over a few, but it's important for me to know what I'm doing in the 12th step. Polly said it was very important to go back to 3 to get to 10 and 11. I agree. But that second step for me, you know, was a hard one. We agnostics, you know, has a 2-question test for alcoholism. When I take one, if I cannot control the amount that I take, or if when I honestly want to, I find I can't quit entirely, one of the two. If when I take one, I can't control it, that's me. If when I honestly want to quit, I find I can't quit on my own, that's me. Then you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. Oh my God. So there's the illness. I'm an alcoholic. And here's the medicine. Only a spiritual experience. I don't believe that. Why would I believe only a spirit? I tried a religious, I tried a falling in love experience, kept getting loaded. I tried a making money experience, kept getting loaded. I tried a working out experience, kept getting loaded. I tried a playing softball experience, kept getting loaded. I tried a getting married and starting a family experience, kept getting loaded. I tried a getting ahead in business experience, kept getting loaded. I even tried an acupuncture and going to est experience, kept getting loaded. If it ain't a spiritual experience, then I'm in big trouble, you know. And the cold thing about about that. You know, there's a part in there. I love when Joe talked about a dilemma, you know, and he talks about being on the horns of a dilemma, two equally, you know, bad alternatives. And it says, you know, to be doomed to die an alcoholic death or to live life on a spiritual basis are not always easy. Why isn't that easy? Doomed to die alcoholic death or live life. Why ain't that easy? Because they put that little blast piece in there, or to live life on a spiritual basis. You know, when are alternatives not easy? As a kid, they used to offer you when you were sick either castor oil or cod liver oil. Really? That's my choices? Gas chamber electric chair. Come on now. You know. You can listen to Lawrence Welk or listen to Liberace. Oh my God, you know. When are alternatives not easy? When they look exactly alike or they look equally distasteful. You know, and spiritual life and alcoholic death look the same to me. Why is that? Because I don't know what spiritual life look like, and I think I do. I don't know what the medicine tastes like, but I don't like the way it looks like the medicine tastes. I haven't tasted the medicine. But the folk who did taste it, I don't like the way it looked like it tastes to me. And who take medicine for taste anyway? Me, I want my cherry flavor. You know, and so this idea of spiritual life, I thought I knew what spiritual life looked like, and I didn't. I love when Joe was talking. I thought it meant no chasing, no sex, no cussing, no fun, no nothing that I like to do. But why would I do it then? Why did I embark on it then? If I thought all those things, I thought that I didn't like the way it looked like the medicine tasted. And check this out. Plus, I know I can't take the medicine as prescribed. I see a lot of people taking the medicine, but that's because y'all like it. I'm going to spit it out. I'm not going to take it 3 times a day. That's too much of a regimen. I know I can't do this, you know. So what made me? Took the negative second step. I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been living it. I had come to believe that I'd be walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock at night every night. That's where it took me. That's where it took me. Okay. And so then I had two things. One, I didn't have nothing to lose with trying this spiritual life. And two, witness testimony. Thank God we have means. Thank God we have means. Thank God we have means. And it was a lot of people in here that said, I didn't think I would like the way the medicine tasted. Because I thought that the only reason people took the medicine is because they liked it. But when I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found a whole bunch of people just like me, worldly indeed, did not like the medicine. Took it anyway. And got results. Witness testimony. Every time we go to meetings, witness testimony. Every time we get up here, witness testimony. That's why most of our members, when they get up here, they're careful to say, I know I didn't do this by myself. And I know I didn't do this on my own. Okay, so maybe there's a chance that this power can do something for me. If you're going to do something, make a decision. Made a decision. I love when Polly said that the rest of the program stands on the third. I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as you need. And when you read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, a lot of times it's comforting, but, you know, a lot of people think that this book was written, and a lot of people call it divinely inspired. I believe it was. And one of the reasons I believe it was divinely inspired is the authors of the book wrote about things that were beyond their scope. They wrote about things that they didn't have any business knowing about. They wrote about things that they did not have any business and they could not know. Here's the thing that we have. A lot of times we want to cling to the first 100 and the way that they did it. And if the first time I always used to say that, we never had it so good. A lot of people think we need to be rewriting the book. A lot of things that people say, a lot of what Bill wrote in the book was optimistic and hopeful. When he wrote The Promises, he started writing the book in 1938. He was coming up on 3 years sober. There was not a large sample size for him to write The Promises. There wasn't a large sample size. So imagine whatever guided his hand, and we've lived long enough to see, dude, I don't know what made you say that, but damn it, we know a new freedom and a new happiness, and it's real and it's lasting. It's lasting. It's true in my life. And we got big sample size. So they wrote about something. Who in this room right now is 3 years sober? Who's exactly three? Not more than three. Who's exactly three? You, you, and you. Who's less than three? Okay, we want you three, that's three, to take all these other ones out, go in the back and write a book that's going to say the rest of our life. And they would probably take the challenge on. Because when you get to be 33, you get hobbled sometimes by what you think you know. Sometimes you get handicapped. That's like adults sometimes get handicapped. But sometimes a kid or an adolescent, I'll do it. And I think those hopeful drunks, I think the spirit of those hopeful drunks, not knowing no better. Bill said, I'll do it. He wasn't the author. He wasn't the writer. Well, none of that stuff. He was a drunk seeking a way out. And so for most of us, because it was beyond his scope and skill, we know that this book was divinely inspired. But by the same token, it wasn't like angels were writing it. Drunks were writing it. There's a lot of stuff up in there. People wrote this book. So in the third step, Bill is kind of tricky. He's tricky. Third step has a bait and switch moment in it. I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me. Relieve me. Now, the next sentence will say, relieve me of this thirst. Relieve me of the desire to drink beverage alcohol. Relieve me of this insatiable thirst that I have that keeps me getting in trouble. But it doesn't say that. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Hey. What part of the game is that? Where did that come up? Relieve me of the bondage of self. When did I sign up for that? Whole deal. Whole rest of the deal. That's the whole thing we do. Relieve me. You don't see us spending a lot of time in the rest of the time. You don't see us spending a lot of time what you might think before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Folk would be spending a lot of time giving tips. You know, don't go around bars at night. Stay away from people who are drinking. You know, you would think that's what takes place in our... You don't hear no discussions of that. Relieve me of the bondage of... That's my problem. Whole deal. You know, the spiritual solution we talk about? What's the medicine? I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. Whole deal, spiritual experience. Want a spiritual experience? Grow God, shrink Ralph. Whole deal. Grow God, shrink Ralph. God ain't hiding. He's blocked. Too much me. I was at breakfast with a sponsee one time. She was like, Sponce, you know, I really want to get into the steps. I just think it's so much more of me. I'm like, no, baby, we need a whole lot less of you. We don't need more of you. The whole deal. So the rest of the steps, 4 through 12, ego reducing exercise. Then, you know, when I came in, October 11, 1986, you know, and I said that the tsunami stopped, the wave stopped right there. Something happened. I was defeated, and I was so defeated that there was so much of me that was washed away that it was just enough. Because grace is grace. Grace always been. God didn't deliver grace on October 11, 1986. God don't do but one thing. He just keep guiding. All he does is grace. That's all he does. That's all he does. You know, I'm one of the ones, and here's where opinion comes in. You know, it's not my opinion that it's in God's time that I'm going to come. No, part of that is, it's always God's time for me to come to him. It's, am I defeated if I give it up on me? There's something alcohol has to do. You know, had I given up on me? And on October, I was defeated enough. Later on, they started talking about, you know, deflation and death. Was I defeated? And I was defeated enough that a small sliver of grace pierced the window. And that's what we do. We got these big windows, you know, and the receiver is, the sender ain't blocked, the receiver is blocked. Grace is just going, but it keeps bouncing off the window. And when I'm defeated, a small sliver. And what we start doing the rest of the time, because we can't create the grace. We can't direct the grace. But what we do is we smudge the window. We rub the window. And 4 and 5, we start rubbing the window. we start clearing away what's blocking in 4 and 5. Clearing away what's blocking. And it seems like hard work at first. I love when Joe talked about boot camp. And the first steps, 1 through 9, they seem like hard work at first because they require a lot of effort on my part. They require a lot of effort. It's like when you're installing cable. But the difference is in cable, when you're installing it, you're actually putting the cable in. This cable is already there. You're just clearing away what's blocking the signal. The signal is already coming, but you're clearing it away. And until the signal gets cleared, there's a lot of work for me to do. And so 4 and 5, I'm smudging the window. And it, those inventories, you know, the resentment inventory, the fear inventory, the sex conduct inventory, it seems like a lot of work on my part. I have to go back, and it's a lot of stuff that I'm looking at on my own power. It's a lot of stuff I'm bringing to the task, you know, and I was doing that early on. And then when I get through doing that, I get to 6 and 7. And 6 and 7 is another one of the surrenders. You know, I have heard, very seldom heard it put as well as Joe did it for us this weekend. My sponsor called 6 and 7. He says that those defects of character that we have, it's a design feature. He calls it a design feature. What if I didn't have defects of character? What do we know that is without defect? So, say it again. So if I'm without defect, I'm God. By definition, I'm human. I gotta have defects. A design feature. I'm designed to be plugged in. I'm designed to be plugged in. I'm designed to be plugged into a power. I'm designed to have a power. I go to the power because of my defect. If I'm perfect, I don't need a power. If I do everything right, I don't need a power. And God designed Ralph White as Ralph White so well that even though, dude, I made you defective, guess what? I'm going to make you useful with your defects. Stop tripping. You ain't going to never be 6 feet. Be content being where you are. Stop tripping. And that ain't even a character defect. That's just a material defect. But stop tripping. You ain't going to never, you know, there are some things about you that's going to always be about you. When Leslie was taking her time coming in here, she's a dollar two, Polly. You know, you take your behind to the meeting. Let her be who she is. Love her for being who she is. You go to a meeting and you take that defect. You go right there. You going to be who you going to be. I pout. I'm 66 years old. I don't get my way, I still pout like I'm 6. I done made peace with that. I've made peace with that. That's who I am. Design feature. When you think of the word defect, what do you think of anyway in the manufacturing sense? When a car is defective, what happens? When there's a model that's defective, what happens? Recall where? To manufacturer, 6 and 7. Recall the manufacturer. Car don't work on itself. And so then I do the work in 6 and 7. Then I get to 8 and 9, and now I start cleaning up. I start cleaning up. You know, I start cleaning up the wreckage, and I start doing that stuff. And so then at the end of 9, it says, so by now we have entered the world of the city. I'm in a new place, and I'm stepping into the sunlight, and now I'm working with power tools. I'm out of boot camp. I'm being deployed. And I'm working with power tools. And now it's a lot of, and I'm walking on the sunny side of the street. Norm Alpert used to talk about walking on, I've listened to his tapes. I wish I had met that man. Walking on the sunny side of the street. Grace. Grace. I'm still wiping the window, but oh my God, it's a different view, newcomer. I'm not one that's a 33 years sober going to ever stand up in front of you and say, and you know, if you catch me on a bad day, you still suffer. I know the kind of humility that sometimes people want to, you know, impart when they get to, but no, I'm not the same guy. If I'm the same guy at 33 years, why do this? Why would we do it? Why would we waste our time doing it? I'm not the same man. Walking on the sunny side of the street. And so now when you're working with power tools, even though 10 sounds a lot like 4 and 5 again, you can go through it quicker because you're working with power tools. It's like when the cable is in there, woo, cable is fast, you know. But before you were doing manual labor. You were working with, you know, you were uncovering what's blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. Now I've uncovered it and now I'm walking in this world of the spirit. And my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I always got to remember, do I want to be right or do I want to be effective? Do I want to be right or do I want to be effective? Do I want to be right or do I want to be effective? And so now I'm walking in this new place, you know, and I love when Polly talked about, I'm big on that too, Polly. Because 10, a lot of people be like, sponsor, I'm doing a 10. And I know I got one of my favorite sponsors. He's good at that too, on the spot. Now, the thing about the 10 step, though, and the, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll skip, you know, because it says, you know, first thing is to say, ask God at once. Usually I'll skip that and I might go to, you know, discuss, cause, no, did you ask God? And so now, because I'm living in this new place, but the thing about it is, even though I'm living, oh man, I've done amends and the rest of this, I should be cool in the game. I should be traveling, you know, I'm not going to get mad at nobody no more. I'm not going to trip no more. Oh, really? Ralph White, you. You've been with you guys 33 years. I've been on this earth 66 years. I got 33 years of some hard drive information. Hard drive. Hardwired. Some of it is not going to get off the hard drive. I'm going to be, some of it is going, and like I say, I think it's a design feature. If I don't have anything that crops up, what do I need God for? Trust me, I need God. I'm a falling down guy. You know, I'm a staggering and making mistake guy. You know, I'm a guy that has stuff happen in sobriety guy. I'm a guy that walks through valley sober guy. I'm a get my hands dirty guy. And I love the life that I lead because I'm not scared. And so Polly talked about the 10 and 11. So now that we walk through that process of waking up, what do we do? Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. And it's one of the favorite things that I get up. Now, a lot of times we talk about the carrying the message part, and that's huge, but the practicing principles. A lot of times when I talk about 12, I forget about the principal practicer part. And I have to have it's a good thing. You know, it talks about early on in our steps, it talks about grasping and developing a manner of living. So this grasping and development of these principles that now we talk about. And that's why it was so painstaking to go through this process. But it's so much fun, too. It's not, I'm not one that talks about, I've never, since the time I got sober, and I'm abundantly blessed. I came 4 times before I came to stay. But since I came to stay, I don't know of a day in my recovery in the past 33 years, I can't think of a day when I've felt like I wouldn't be sober. It hasn't been hard for me to stay with you guys. It's been hard for me sometimes to face life and its challenges. But it hasn't been hard for me to stay with you. And I think one of the reasons it hasn't been hard for me to stay with you guys at all is I'm one of the ones that's so grounded in this 12. Practical experience shows that when all other measures fail, nothing ensures immunity from drinking like working with another one. I've never not worked with another. I've never, ever, ever. In my lowest valley. You know, I was 22 years sober. Had lost a 20-year marriage. Had lost my house in front of everybody. Because I'm transparent. I was already out talking a lot, doing all that, but in front of everybody. And I remember the day we had to move. I was at a state line doing a talk on the third step. And I was in my room getting ready for the talk. And my then wife called me right before I was getting ready to go talk about step 3. Made a decision to turn my will and life over to God. She said, there's a note on the door and we got to be out. state line is 2 weeks before Christmas. And that year I had left the profession I was working in, and not that year, 3 years previous, and I was working in real estate, and I was making a lot of money for 2 years. And then 1 year, that last year came, and I was broke. Clearly hadn't made a house note. That's why they took my house. Clearly didn't have no money, and it was Christmas coming. And I was standing up the state line. I got that call, and I went downstairs. And I never know what I'm going to share. I'm not one that likes bringing, I don't cry at the podium. I bring you all my stuff. But I always bring it in the spirit of, God got this and I know it. I always bring it in the spirit of, take away my difficulties, the victory over them, may bear witness to those I would help, but I power, I love, and I way of life, may I do thy will always. So I bring you everything. I just bring it. And so I'm sharing, you know, because I'm in the third step. I'm talking about the third step. And as a, you know, you make me better than I am. You know, when you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to tell you a secret. When you go through some lean in, a lot of people walk away from AA when you're going through a storm. Lean in. This is the best place to be when you're in a storm. Lean in to Alcoholics Anonymous. We like the best cut man you can get. I don't know if it's any fight fans here, but if you're a fight fan, the best thing a fighter can have is a good corner. You know, a good cut man. Because when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you come staggering. Because every now and then, don't keep fighting life. You know how they say, you know, God won't give you more than you can handle? That's true. But sometimes life will. That's why you need God. You know, and every now and then, you know, you just have to take an eight. You take a knee. And you come to a meeting, and you battered, and you bruised, and you take a knee. And we like the corner. And we patch you up, and we hold you. And we come on, Joe, you're a champion, dude. You can do this. And we patch you up, and we throw you back out there, and we rally around, and we watch you, and you watch, and you come on, baby, you can do this, Barb. Dick, you guys been in the ring a lot of times. You can do this. You can do it. We know you can. We got you. We got you. And you patch me up, and you put me back out there, and we keep walking. And a lot of times, we don't have perfect lives. We may not get the million. We may not get, but we stand, and we walk, and we walk together, and they held me up. Like you always do. I'm better with you than I am by myself. And when I hear myself talking, you know what? How many people in here sponsor? You know, it's a lot. So have you ever heard something come out of your mouth that you didn't know you knew? Where does that, where did that come from? You know, because I hear people at the podium all the time talking about my sponsor. And I'd be like, damn, I need to go to sponsor school. I want to say something wise like that. And then all you got to do is start sponsoring. You'll say it. I guarantee you it'll come out of your mouth. You won't even know that you knew it. But you, when it comes out of your mouth, you know you knew it. When it comes out of your mouth and you say, baby, it's going to be all right. And you be sitting there too baffled like them. But you say it's going to be all right. And you know it. And you know it. I'm better with you than I am by myself. I'm just better. I'm just better. When I'm driving by myself, I break down, cry. I don't know. I don't know how we gonna make it. You know, Sister B, when I was a year sober, I went to the Vegas Roundup. And Sister B was talking. And Sister B was saying, I pray as a living. She said, that's my profession. I'm a professional prayer. She said, but check this out. God and me alone is not enough. He said, I need you. And that's been true for me. I think that's why Bill wrote it. When everything else fails. Now, try everything else. Because everything else don't always fail. Writing, talk to sponsor, praying. But sometime, all of us gone. What do? Find another. When it seems like the most counterintuitive thing to do. I don't have nothing to give nobody right now. I don't want to see Dick's smiling face. I don't want to see him on my cell phone. I want to sit here and isolate. I've heard Polly talk a lot. Isolation is probably the height of self-centeredness. because all I'm doing is thinking about me. You know. And you, and it's a lot of people in here to sponsor. And you know, and a lot of people, it's a lot of time, you look at that number and be like, damn. Ooh, but it's a lifesaver. It's a lifesaver. It's a lifesaver. And I want to tell you, you know, I stood up there that day. I didn't know how it would be Christmas at the White House. But when I sat down, it was all right. It was all right. People came up and hugged me. People came up. I don't like to share this part because this is not necessarily Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are lots of members in here that have stories like this. Polly and I were sharing about one today. And I don't want to, I don't like sharing this because it ain't Alcoholics Anonymous, but it is Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I went back to my room. And somehow, some way, some members at that group had decided they wanted me and my family to have Christmas. Call it the kindness of strangers. But there are no strangers when you walk in this room. The minute you sign up and join us, you got a new family. First name, your name, last name, alcoholic. You never walk alone again a day in your life. So, practical experience for me has always shown nothing ensures immunity from drinking like working with another. I've always worked with another. Started sponsoring when I was 11 months sober. They have a lot of questions about sponsorship, and I don't disagree with any of them. I don't disagree with anything anybody else does, and I really don't. You know, I used to have ideas, and I used to have judgments. I was one of the people that when you first get in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, there are some phases that most folk go through. First, there's the phase that when you discover the book, you the first person discovered it. Oh, now you go to meetings, and you quote and stuff. Old-timers be like, yeah, he finally read the book. You know, you be correcting old-timers. That ain't what's in the book. You know, here's a guy that's been sober, you know, 30 years at your home group. He's an old guy. He didn't happen to read the book. He just happened to live the book. But you correcting him, that old dude don't even know. And, you know, you go through that phase, you know. Then you go through the phase and nobody else knows how to do it. You know, no, that's not how you write a four-step. No, that's not how you do the, no. And then you go through that phase. And then if you're fortunate and you come out on the other end with that ego suitably reduced. Because check this out. The same thing that should be an ego-reducing exercise, for a guy like me, I can make it ego-inflating. For a guy like me, I can make it ego-inflating. I know the goddamn book. Don't be trying to tell me. You need to, So it's very important that a guy like me, I love it when you guys come up and you thank me, and I love it, but I don't read my own press clippings, and I never grade my own paper. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why we have sponsors. Don't grade your own papers. That's why I have a sponsor. I started sponsoring, and I started on that path. And so I don't have an idea about how people sponsor. I just sponsor how I sponsor. And I don't, you know, some people will say you need to have gone through all 12 steps. And, you know, and I reference, but you guys don't know how you've impacted me. That's why I reference people so often. You know, Polly and I have a lot of the same idea on sponsorship. We were somewhere one time, and Polly's like, stay one step ahead of the posse. You know, sometimes I think that some people will say, you're not ready to sponsor. You ready to sponsor when somebody asks you? That's like, when are you ready to have a baby? When you get pregnant? I didn't plan this. It's in there. I don't know how to sponsor yet, sponsor. Well, you're going to learn on the job. Everybody does. There's no sponsorship school. You know, and you can have read that book inside and out and still not be qualified. For me, now I'm straight in the realm of opinion right now. I'm not the guy whose sponsorship is just, I'm going to clinically take you 1 through 12. I care about you. That'll erase a whole lot of mistakes. I'm built that way. I sponsor inside of my personality. I don't sponsor inside of somebody else's personality. And when I sponsor inside my personality, I'm at weddings. I'm at funerals. I'm at the house. You at my house. We talking about other things. That's me. That's me. You know, some people feel like, and I do not disagree with that. I don't disagree with a person who feels like a person needs that work and knowledge and experience. I'm talking about me now. One of my greatest joys right now, because I'm gone a lot. I'm gone a lot. I'm not on the ground a lot. I believe a person that's brand new needs boots on the ground and needs eyes on them a lot of the time. So one of the things I love, because people come up or people will sit me, and I love putting people with sponsors. I love putting my sponsees with sponsees. I love it. I have guys that I know are hungry and are ready to sponsor. And I know. And there was a guy in my workshop and he came up to me, Ralph. I sit at the front and I'm the one talking. So you want to get in there? Okay. But no. And so I put him with my boy Taylor, and Taylor's got 2 sponsees and he owns them. He owns his sponsor and he gets with them and it's nothing like seeing that. It's nothing like seeing the lights come on. It's nothing like seeing somebody grow and blossom and bloom. And I see them go off in their corners and they go off in their, oh my God. You know, so I'm kind of like that. You know, I've seen guys. I've seen it. I've seen men and women who have been stuck and would not move. And you let them start sponsoring. It's like you can be the worst kid. Then you become a parent all of a sudden. All the things that you saw that you were doing, you become one of the best. Sometimes a guy that was not moving, once he started sponsoring, blew up. Because now he's not going to try to tell another guy to do something he's not doing. You know, so this is just stuff that this is just Ralph in the whole realm of him just talking about this is my own opinion. You don't have to take it. You don't have to do it with what's inside what it is that you do, and do what's inside it is what you and your sponsor do. You know, but you have me up here so you get my experience this morning. You know, and principle practicing, huge. Huge. When you talk about 6 and 7, and that goes back to 12. You know, I get the opportunity. You know, a lot of times I think that I need to figure out how these steps go. You know, 6 and 7, which is a lifetime deal. 6 and 7, if I'm thorough about doing 8 and 9, 10 and 11 and 12, I'm dealing with 6 and 7 anyway. A lot of times people say in 6 and 7, which is, I think is the crux. You know, I used to not like to talk about, but I think it's the crux of the deal. You know why? You know why I think it's only a couple of paragraphs written about 6 and 7 in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I think the whole book is about 6 and 7. What part of the book is not about removing defects of character? So as I start practicing these principles in all my affairs, I've never come close to drinking since I've been sober, I don't think. I had one time where I got close. Don't know what's making me think of this story. I'm getting ready to get down from here. And one time when I came close, and I wasn't thirsty, and I wasn't in the obsession. I was 7 years sober. I was working at a law firm. We had a big case in Palm Springs, 2 hours from L.A. So we had to move into a hotel, the trial team. And we were in a hotel. And we won the case the first day of trial. Big case, big client. Our client was the Walt Disney Company. Won this case, big case. We were in the hotel room, 7 people in a circle. And Disney's general counsel, 2 lawyers from Disney, 2 partners from my firm, associate.